to have here to be recognized for this commitment the President of Ecuador, Rafael Correa, Scott Wallace, the co-chair of the Wallace Global Fund, and Atossa Soltani, Executive Director of Amazon Watch. This is a commitment to advance a proposal from the Ecuadorian government aimed at simultaneously preventing two separate causes of global climate change, tropical deforestation and oil consumption. Mr. President, would you join me on the stage? Scott? Tessa?
I'm going to read a little bit more now. So.
This is a really visionary proposal for a green Ecuador that prioritizes environmental markets and equitable economic development. The Wallace Global Fund is making a CGI commitment of $100,000 in support. This commitment will enable the government of Ecuador to begin exploring viable economic options to acquire compensation for keeping this oil in the ground, potentially mitigating the release of 436 million tons of CO2. Earlier this year, President Correa of Ecuador announced his own commitment to foregoing the development of the country's largest oil reserve in the Amazon basin's most biodiverse area of rainforest, located below Yasuni National Park. They like it. Yasuni Park is the Amazon basin's most biodiverse area, the rainforest, home to indigenous peoples, and protecting this area is a gift to the planet in the vocabulary of World Wildlife Fund. However, the proposal requires Ecuador to forego an estimated $4.6 billion in oil revenues. It's one of the most significant measures yet proposed by a developing nation to tackle climate change. Wallace Global Fund is calling on the international community to join them in supporting Ecuador's historic step towards becoming the first sustainable economy in our hemisphere, if not the world, that will serve as a model for other countries to emulate. Amazon Watch, Earth Economics, Save America's Forests, the C.S. Mott Foundation, and the World Resources Institute are partners in supporting the government of Ecuador to achieve this goal. Profound congratulations, Mr. President.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our panelists. Stu Eisenstadt, partner, Covington & Burling. Franz Tottenbach, executive director, Fundacor. Jane Goodall, founder, the Jane Goodall Institute. Eduardo Braga, governor, state of Amazonas, Brazil. And our moderator, Rosina Bierbaum, Dean and Professor, University of Michigan, School of Natural Resources and the Environment.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am so pleased that this CGI is discussing protecting tropical forests. Forests have often been called the lungs of the planet. Trees hold carbon as they grow, keep it in place, and then release it as they are either burned or die and decay. And currently, 20 to 25% of the growth of CO2 in the atmosphere is attributed to deforestation. It will not be possible to avoid dangerous interference with the climate system unless we get a handle on the loss of forests, and in particular, the loss of tropical forests. Forest area has declined 20% in the world. That's some 10 million square kilometers, and most of that's happened in the last few decades. Until 1950, the developed countries were responsible for most of it, and then developing countries grew until in the 90s, essentially all deforestation came from the deforestation in tropical countries, about half of that from tropical Asia and about a third of it from the tropical Americas. Over the next 100 years, tropical deforestation could contribute another 80 to 135 billion metric tons of carbon. That's the equivalent of 1 to 2 decades of fossil fuel burning. So clearly, protecting tropical forests is very, very important to protecting our climate. While the Kyoto Protocol has mechanisms to assist developing countries reforest or put new forests into place, it does not have mechanisms to prevent tropical deforestation. Tropical forests also happen to hold about a half of the world's known species, and the most recent Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change projected that if the world goes through a 2 degrees C temperature increase, we could lose 20 to 40% of the world's biodiversity. So climate change is a planetary emergency, and biodiversity loss is a planetary emergency, and we must and can confront the two of these things together. Fortunately, there are some very innovative programs that are stopping the loss of tropical forests. They're in Central and South America, in Africa, in Southeast Asia, and we're going to hear about some of these wonderful developments today. We have a very distinguished panel to tackle these important and difficult issues and to share their wisdom with us, and it is not a moment too soon to have this conversation. I'd like to start first with Jane Goodall, known to so many of us for your almost now 5 decades of work at the intersection of humans and the environment, starting with, of course, her groundbreaking understanding of chimpanzees in Tanzania and the relationship to environment and preservation and conservation. And then she has moved into community-based conservation and most recently into children's environmental education programs. So, Dr. Goodall, based on your vast experiences, what strategies for protecting wildlife are most effective, and what do you think we need to do to keep our ecosystems intact so that we can preserve both biodiversity and confront climate change?
Well, thank you. And let me start off by saying how I came into this whole new area, having spent years and years just sitting in the forest with the chimpanzees. And it was when, about 19 years ago, I flew in a small plane over the Gombe National Park, along which is on the eastern side of Lake Tanganyika, and I saw that outside this little jewel of forest of only 30 square miles, all the trees had gone, all of them. People's population growth, more people living on the land than the land could support, soil erosion. You could tell from looking down on the, from the plane that people were struggling to survive. How then could we preserve the chimpanzees? And it's a very, very poor part of Africa. So we started a program called Take Care, the Jane Goodall Institute's effort to improve the lives of people living in 24 villages around Gombe and along the lake, in a very holistic way, which there isn't time to go into, but ranging from tree nurseries to improved health care and particularly microcredit opportunities for women and scholarships for girls. And this program moved on to help farmers to market their coffee, farmers in the very high hill areas who couldn't make money from, because by the time they got their coffee to the market, they'd already spent too much getting it there, and also honey. And this means that with a combination of improving people's lives, growing woodlots so that the women don't have to go out and forage for firewood in the remaining little areas of the natural forest, that people have become our partners, and they are now understanding fully the value that the forest plays in protecting watersheds, in preventing soil erosion, and also in providing medicinal plants. So this program, which began in Tanzania, we are expanding into the Democratic Republic of Congo, into the Congo Republic, and to some extent into Cameroon. Going into these areas, which are so different, the threat to the chimpanzees there is the commercial bushmeat trade, that is hunting of all animals living within the forest, made possible by the logging companies, mostly European, cutting roads deep into the heart of the forest, and then the hunters will shoot everything from elephants to birds and bats, smoke it, and truck it on the logging trucks into the urban areas where people pay more for it than a piece of chicken or goat. So thinking about how to preserve these huge areas of forest where the main danger is logging, the governments are getting money from logging concessions. Therefore, it becomes imperative not only to work with people on the ground, but to try and find some way, some alternative, not just for people living their lives, but governments to get money through other sources than selling off forest concessions with all the damage that they do. Ecotourism is one way, but there isn't really the infrastructure in Central Africa. And avoided deforestation, I think, is a very, very powerful way of preserving large areas of forest, helping to combat the money that can be offered by logging concessions. These days, the big problem in many parts of Africa is the determination of the Chinese to secure the natural resources that they're running out of in their own country for their own rapid economic growth. So that's how a little girl who dreamed of going to Africa to study chimpanzees has got involved in things like deforestation and climate change. And I would like to say as a last word that these forests are so majestic and so beautiful in their own right that even if they didn't contribute to helping climate change, we need them for their own selves. We need them for the amazing beings, the biodiversity living there. We need them for the children of the future. And I want the children of the future to hear, as I heard, the wonderful voice of the chimpanzees calling out and greeting. Please help us.
Thank you, Dr. Goodall. We are so happy that little girl went to Africa, and we're so grateful for you continuing to educate all of us. Eduardo Braga is the governor of Amazonas, the largest state in Brazil, and in June of this year, he announced a new climate change law, the first in Brazil. It allows compensation for environmental services that includes payments to farmers and river dwellers for avoiding deforestation. His state includes 40% of the protected areas of Brazil, but only 2% of the deforestation. So tell us, Governor Braga, what has the state of Amazonas done to reduce deforestation, and what more do you have in mind?
First of all, I'd like to thank you for the invitation, and I'd like to thank also to Clinton Global Initiative to give this opportunity to my state and for our people to be here and talking about how to preserve the tropical forest, and also to say that the principal point, in our opinion, and maybe the key drivers of conservation of those forests is poverty and leak education. Our state reduced deforestation at 51% in the last 4 years, and this result is a consequence of a strong investment in social policies, health care, sustainable development program based in economic, environment, and also technological and economic supports to those populations who live by the forest in the conservation units in the protected area. So I think this is a huge opportunity to understand that if we don't fight against poverty, it will be impossible to conserve the chimpanzee, the environment, and whatever. And the truth is, to fight against poverty, we need to create jobs. And how create jobs by the forest, respecting the environment only in the sustainable way? How to do that without technology? It's impossible. How to do that without education? It is impossible. So our state created this law, the first Brazilian law about climate change program, and we created one state fund This fund has two different aspects. One is a donation fund, and the state of Amazonas opened this fund with one donation of $10 million. And we are, at this moment, paying to 2,000 families to know deforestation inside of the protected areas. And we have a goal until 2010 to get 60,000 families in this program. On the other hand, we are creating also another fund. It is an investment fund based in environment services, providing from the conserved tropical forest. And this fund, as you said in the opening of this panel, maybe is the new frontier of the preservation of tropical forests. How can we financing, how can we payment, how can we understand better the environment services provided by those forests, native forests. One thing I believe that everyone agree is that the biodiversity that we have in those native forests is incomparable with any other reforestation that we can do it. So prevent, avoid deforestation, I think is very important. To do so, we have to invest in and sustainable development program and also invest in education.
Could you say a word about the Green Free Trade Zone?
Yeah, Green Free Trade Zone is exactly the model that I'm talking about. It's a model who try to combine tax benefits, credit benefits, technical support, logistics support, minimal price sets, and also market access for the products from the forest. And with this strategy, we change completely the perspective against the former governor, which was before me, and he used to give to the people a Chinese sauce. Is a policy of development in my state. We changed that completely, and we start to give to the people a new model, which is the sustainable model, giving and adding economic value for the forest. Standing forest has to be evaluated by the market for the people work with those forests and doesn't deforestate those forests, and in this way they can have better conditions of life and they can conservate those native forests.
Thank you for your leadership, Governor Braga. It's very exciting what you're doing. I would like now to turn to Costa Rica and ask Franz Tottenbach, who heads up a non-governmental organization called Fundacor, to speak to us. He actually set up the world's first carbon offset deal, which was worth $2 million in 1997. And now farmers are being paid, I believe it's $14 million a year to plant trees and not to cut them down. Franz says the incentives are working and there has been a reverse in the loss of forests in the last few years. And he asserts that if you ask any farmer in Costa Rica, they can tell you about carbon offsets, and they can tell you why that would be protecting a global good, ecosystem goods and services. So I welcome the Costa Rican farmers to come and speak to a number of our farmers in the developed world. And then I invite you, Franz, to talk to us about the impact of Fundacor and also how are we going to finance payment for environmental service programs?
Thank you very much. It's a real, first of all, an honor to be here, and I am very thankful to the Clinton Global Initiative and to you. In fact, Costa Rica started in 1996 a wide program that had been initiated through Fundacor on environmental service payment, and the proof is in the cake. Nowadays, it's easy to see that the country has gained forest cover. It has gone from a 26% forest coverage to about over 50% now. It has detained deforestation as an active thing. What did we do? We put a price on carbon. I mean, on among other things, and in biodiversity, and on water, and of course, when we pay environmental services to farmers, I like to say we pay wholesale, we pay for all of them, the farmers cannot separate if they are selling carbon or biodiversity preservation. It's our job to do it, the governments and the NGOs and the technicians. But to finance it, which is to come to the other question, to finance it, we will need to have these emerging markets, the carbon market being one of them. I used to work with my country delegation in the Kyoto Protocol, and I tell you, it was I used to call it one of the biggest policy blunders of the Kyoto Protocol, among others, is to have left deforestation out of it. We have missed the possibility of financing forest conservation and all the biodiversity that goes with it because of some strange things, like maybe that it will lower the price of carbon. Okay, so we could do more. I mean, we can do it cheaper, or we can do things that actually have some other benefit, like protecting biodiversity. So it's strange. I like to say that preserving the rainforest seems to be a very good business for the world, and there are more qualified people than me to say that, the leading biologists and very reputable conservationists like sitting next to me. But if it is a good business for the world, it should also be made a good business for the countries, for the states, like the state of Amazonia, and ultimately for the people who does that. You might wonder, this is kind of like a blackmail? You pay people not to do something? I mean, I think you should address this a little bit. No, not at all. It's, the concept is like save a what, that was in the earlier section. But we need to connect. We need to develop financial mechanisms that connect one with the other. What Costa Rica did, in part, and partially, has financed the program with a tax on fossil fuels. Actually, it's a 3.19% tax on fossil fuels that was enacted during President Figueres in 1996, and is now gave the country enough of a spread that now it can move into we can aspire to become more aggressive in the future in terms of climate change. The financing, the emissions of the two sectors put together, if you take energy plus land use change, actually has stabilized emissions in Costa Rica for the last maybe 10 years. The two sectors together have not grown in emissions, in spite from the fact that energy consumption has grown. One has helped reduce the emissions of the other. Why cannot we do this worldwide? It's a question that we need you to answer. Mm-hmm. And I think the opportunity, as was mentioned earlier, is there with a sector that is emitting maybe 20% of global emissions. Mm-hmm. But it might be 60% of developing country emissions, mm-hmm. by the way. I mean, so I'll take that into account too. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, that seems to be sort of a perfect transition to come to Stu Eisenstadt, who is currently an independent director on the Chicago Climate Exchange, but has held many different diplomatic and government roles. And I had the honor of being part of the U.S. delegation when Stu was our principal negotiator on the Kyoto Protocol. So, Stu, why was it that when we negotiated the Kyoto Protocol, deforestation was excluded? And how do we now, where we include the United States, bring deforestation into the post-2012 regime?
Rosina, where were you when I really needed you? There were several reasons. We were able to get afforestation and reforestation, but not avoided deforestation. And there were really three basic reasons. The first was we were so occupied with the macro issues, negotiating with the European Union and Japan and others on what level of reduction from 1990 baseline levels we could afford economically. Second, getting issues like emissions trading, which the EU did not want to have at all, built into Kyoto, deciding the role of offsets, the role of sinks, trying to get China and India and developing countries to play. So this simply was a late issue when we finally resolved all the others. Second, there are legitimate concerns about the verification and integrity of these credits that were raised by a number of people then and now. Are they really additional? Are they adding additionality? Are they permanent? What happens if you get a credit for a forest and then there's a forest fire 3 years later or somebody decides to cut it down? So the issue of permanence, additionality, all of these are legitimate concerns, measurement, monitoring. The third, however, and I think most important, is we simply didn't know then what we know now about the role of avoided deforestation. We didn't have the Nicholas Stern report and the IPCC report telling us that 20%, as you mentioned, of all carbon emissions come from deforestation and land use, more than all the global transportation emissions, and second only to fossil fuel burning. We didn't know that this was the cheapest, most reliable way of reducing carbon emissions. We didn't realize the impact that incentivizing poor people, the rural poor who depend on forests, would actually provide, as it's done in Costa Rica, real money to people, and that this could help in poverty alleviation. Notwithstanding Jane's remarkable work, we didn't really appreciate the role of forests and biodiversity. And all of those, including the last and perhaps most important, of all the frustrations in Kyoto, and I can fill this room 10 times over with all those, perhaps one of the most frustrating aspects was not being able to get China and India and any of the developing countries, the so-called G77, to play at all in Kyoto. Now we learn that through giving credits for avoided deforestation, we've got a rainforest coalition of 17 countries, Brazil, Mr. Braga's country, and 11 of those nations, tropical and subtropical forest nations, announced this Monday that they want now to participate in this effort. They want the post-2012 second phase of Kyoto to include forests. So this is a way of incentivizing, which, again, we didn't appreciate. So we've learned a lot, and now we have to make sure that in the next phase, we apply those lessons and don't repeat the mistakes of Kyoto.
And did you include how to get the U.S. on board in those comments?
Yes. If you want that, I'll be glad to deal with it very quickly. As you know, President Clinton signed the accord that I helped negotiate. The next president did not. He withdrew it. He didn't participate at all in it. And everybody, including Congress, took a pass for 7 years. I am amazed, as I go on the Hill, the absence of knowledge about climate change in general and forests in particular. For example, Senator Bingaman, who's a terrific senator, chairman of the Senate Energy Committee, his bill just 2 months ago didn't have a word on forests. We finally were able to get Senator Lieberman and Senator Warner and their principals to include it. My estimate is that there will not be a mandatory cap and trade bill passed by this Congress and signed by this president. We're going to have to wait for the next Congress and the next president, but there will be progress. There'll be a markup. I think there's a real chance that a bill, a cap and trade bill, will pass in the House, but it will not get 60 votes in the Senate. It will not sustain a filibuster. Now, I think that there is one thing I really want to get across, and that is, as much as I would like to see it, regardless of who the next president is, regardless of how many pro-environmental seats are picked up, it will be very difficult, if not impossible, for two-thirds of the Senate to approve a post-Kyoto international treaty. That being the case, what do we do? And I think what we do is, in the cap-and-trade legislation that I think will pass in 2009 and make progress in 2008, you build in an allowance so that countries can trade in our cap-and-trade system and our companies can trade in theirs. So in effect, you build that international linkage without having to get a two-thirds treaty vote. So I think we have to be very creative in doing this. I think it's possible. Again, Congress is not going to fully step up to the bat. I think they're going to do a lot better. There will be a bill, I think, out of the House before the end of the session. There'll be a bill introduced in the Senate. I think it will get a majority of senators, but not 60. And it certainly won't be signed by a president who will be having a conference at the end of this week to try to oppose any mandatory program, and who this very day has his administration trying to prevent California from adopting tougher environmental standards.
Thank you, Mr. Eisenstadt, for those sobering words. As you said, the science has become increasingly clear in the last 7 years, and the pace of climate change and the risks from it are quite startling, and it's clear we're going to need every tool in our toolkit, both in terms of mitigation and adaptation, if we hope to stem temperature increases and keep them below 2 to 2.5 degrees, which is where many scientists are now calling dangerous. I'd like to give both our representatives from Costa Rica and from Brazil a chance to respond to your discussion about the next negotiating steps.
Yeah, and I would like to, I hope in the second round, to talk concretely about how we get into a post-Kyoto world, because there are some very positive things we can do that I'd like to discuss in the next round.
Absolutely, and my suspicion is that everyone sitting at these tables will be frantically sending questions to us related to that and give us ample entree to do that. So in the only couple minutes that we have left, I would like to ask Governor Braga and Mr. Tottenbach to talk about what, from their country's perspectives, are most important to build into the next round of negotiations. And then I will give Jane the last word on what more we need to think about that has not yet come up. So first, Governor Braga.
Well, first I would like to say that Brazil starts to move. And Brazil, as all you know, has a huge area of tropical forest preserved. And in my state, we have 115 million hectares of forest preserved. And as protected area in our state, and state lands, we have 17 million hectares of forests protected by law. The biggest question right now is how to take this protection from the paper for the field, and how to improve those sustainable development program on the field to give to the people who live there better conditions of life, and give them knowledge how to improve the quality and improve also the economic standards of them without destruction of the environment, without deforestation. And maybe this is the biggest issue for the next step of Kyoto, how to support and how to supply those preserved forests to be economic volume and to be also supported by the developed country.
Thank you. Mr. Tottenbach, do you have a short answer?
Thank you. Maybe talking not as government, I'm not government, I'm NGO, but I have to say that Costa Rica has moved, and we are very, very happy to see the announcement of the current government of President Arias, the country going into what is called Peace with Nature Initiative, which has two major elements. Element number one is the pursuit of carbon neutrality in the economy for year 2021, which is what Costa Rica reaches its bicentennial. Mm-hmm. And the second one is the announcement of something equivalent in biodiversity terms. For example, by protecting the rainforest and creating a very strong national park system, Costa Rica expects to protect for life, if you wish, about 5% of the land-based biodiversity of the world. And therefore, this two-pronged strategy called Peace for Nature mm-hmm. will ensure these two kind of global commons, if you wish, from an ethical point of view. Well, of course, carbon finance will help a lot in protecting both of them, reaching the neutrality and reaching the, if you wish, the biodiversity responsible action. Now, a quick word for future negotiations is that we don't do the same mistake that in a way we did with CDM and the climate and the credit creation of the Kyoto Protocol, in which case we were so careful to say this is an offset. And because you're offsetting something in a developed nation with a credit creator in Brazil or in Costa Rica, we have to make so sure that this project doesn't have any leakage. So we basically are saying here that the best we can aspire is cause no harm. Let's not do the same with the forest. I mean, let's make sure we value all the other benefits. Let's make sure we design a way in which, if you wish, trade two for one or something like that. I mean, you have to create two credits of avoided deforestation to comply for one or something like that, and so that you see that there is a global benefit each time you access the mechanism and not create a situation in which each time you access the mechanism you say, oh, well, maybe there is a leakage, maybe we did something wrong, maybe the best we can do is do no harm. That is not a good setting.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I mean literally the last word, Jane.
One word. I think it's really important that we do, as you suggest, as has been said several times, think holistically, think into the future, think through the whole problem with all its ramifications, the way everything is interconnected. And the one thing that I would like to talk about, not now because I've got one word and I said 40, is biofuels and the threat to some areas of rainforest.
Thank you very much. We look forward to your questions to us, and we look forward to your answers to the two questions which will be posed to you now. Please thank our panelists.
Thank you very much. So we want to move right into the table discussions. The two questions for the Tropical Forest panel are the following. Can your table agree on what you believe are the one or two most important priorities for protecting tropical forests? So start with what each of you think and see if you can actually come up with an agreement of the one or two most important priorities. Then the second question, when you've got your two priorities, brainstorm at your table to say what would really be the dream CGI commitment to begin to address the top one of those priorities. Okay? Thanks. You'll have a little less than 25 minutes because we got started a little bit late.